As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code The Athletic. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF-IN-IOWA. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello there. Welcome to Jurassic Pod. We're at the mid-season point of the 2021-22 Toronto Raptors season. They are almost perfectly average, 21-20, 12th on offense, 17th in defense, 15th in net rating, 9th in the East. Oh, baby. What an average team. Not average. On the phone with me.
Oh, wow. Well,
that could also mean below average, but you're not average.
That just was a dig to my heart. Wow, what a cackle. What an evil cackle.
Yeah, well, it was an evil comment. My pal, still in Nova Scotia for, we hope, one more day. And hopefully the snow did not ruin things. You missed a hell of a storm, Holly, but you will still be seeing the aftermath of it when you get back here. It's Holly McKenzie. How are you?
I've been following. I'm well, thank you. And I am also better than average. But yes, I followed the storm via social media and Twitter. Pretty crazy. I'm pretty sure I've never seen a storm of that magnitude the entire time I've lived in Toronto. And yeah, I guess I have to wear boots tomorrow on my flight back, which is kind of disappointing.
It's not what you want.
Yeah, it'll be the first time for boots this year, so.
Oh yeah, you definitely need them to, even wearing boots yesterday when I attempted to take Walter out in the morning.
Oh no, did he disappear in the snow?
Oh, he totally did. He was like doing the butterfly in the snow. It was amazing. He was so bothered. But like I didn't tie up my laces tight enough, and then you got the bad like snow ice inside the boots.
Is there any worse feeling than having wet socks? I don't think there is.
Yeah, but I'm sure there is.
Well, but yes, but like annoyance
that's,
level
that's up does, there, but yeah. I feel like it's worse when it like when it gets like soaking from rain as opposed to snow and ice. And it's like a damp, windy, rainy day. If your socks get wet in that, like that, for some reason, seems worse to me than a potential, like you're walking around in the snow and your socks get wet. Well, I mean, we're picking nits here.
I know.
Yes.
I feel like this is an odd thing to to begin this podcast with. But as you know, people listening may not know, I don't wear socks. I'm not a sock person. I don't wear sneakers and things like that unless I'm like, you know, on a walk, having to work out, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Haven't done that in a while. Thanks, pandemic. But anyway, I usually wear flats. I usually am barefoot, and that is the way I live my life. And I don't like wearing boots, and I don't like having things on my feet. Anyway, I have a whenever I think of like wearing boots in the winter or snow, I have this like very, very, very visceral memory of going to a morning winter exam, like in university, and walking there and having to wear boots. And I had socks on, obviously, and they got wet with snow, and I had to sit in the whole exam in the room with my feet wet, and I couldn't focus at all on my exam because my feet were wet. They felt awful. I hated it. And from that point on, I think of it every winter. Do you have a memory like that where you just like think of it every time? about anything, I guess. I'm sure you do. We all do.
I probably do have that, but I would need to be
primed. What's
the
word?
Yeah. Like I would need the thing that caused me to think about it. Like what I think about winter, and especially this storm, I thought about like walking home from school and like how when all the snow plows and the shoveling, like all the snow ends up going on lawns around you from the driveways and from the street. Like obviously you put the snow on the lawns, and then I just remember like, and that would like create mini mountains of snow on each lawn. And I remember like climbing up and then like jumping down each one as a kid.
That's a
much better winter memory. A traditional Raptors January memory is losing to the Miami Heat in a rock fight. I'm going to call this week that just passed. It was the Raptors Freebird week. I don't know if you understand that reference, Holly, but that's okay. What I mean is the Raptors really played their modern era greatest hits this
mm-hmm,
week.
Mm-hmm.
They I don't know why I didn't just predict this before when we predicted last week, because obviously what was going to happen is they lost to Dwayne Casey in embarrassing fashion in Detroit.
An understatement,
Yeah, they somehow got back the next night and tormented the Milwaukee Bucks and Giannis Antetokounmpo for a surprise win. And then they lost in a rock fight in Miami. Like, I think they've been playing the same game, or versions of the same game, for 6 years, including that playoff series in 2016.
At least they emerged without any new injuries. I'll never forget Fred getting injured the last game of the season.
Oh, against Miami.
Miami.
Cam Birch broke his nose.
That. I mentioned Miami. Bad. I feel silly for thinking that I could will the Raptors to a win against Detroit and break that streak. Another reminder that we don't matter and we cannot will people to wins or losses.
Yeah. I think the most shocking thing was that Detroit or Miami actually had an offensive rating of 113 or so in the win, which is like has got to be a record for the last like 5 years of Raptors games. I know it was 104-99, but it felt a lot more like an 89-84 game.
Yeah.
Like it felt like 20 points should have been taken off both scores. Why is every game against the Heat like this? Well, that's my only question.
Oh my goodness, there was a possession in the first half. I think it was right before halftime, or like just shortly before halftime, where Fred was waiting for Precious to give him the ball back, and Precious just decided
you could be waiting for a while.
Precious just decided he wasn't going to, and it felt like that possession lasted 5 minutes. Like it was just, there was a lot of Precious, and to me that summed up that game. There was just a lot happening, but like without accomplishment. Do you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. I think like on the scale of 1 to Raptors Heat games, that was probably only a 6. Like the max Raptors Heat game was that one where the Raptors shot 6 for 42 a few years ago from three.
Gosh.
Like that was the most Raptors Heat game. But this still like was very much on the scale.
I think we also went into it thinking it was gonna be really interesting. If nothing else, it was going to be interesting because we had the storyline of seeing Kyle play against his former teammates. That didn't happen. So I think like having that like one element of like, ooh, this is new and exciting and fun and emotional and a lot, removing that, which I hope everything is okay with Kyle and all of his loved ones. Of course, he was out of the game for personal reasons. It just made the game seem really empty to me. Like the meaning was gone because I was very emotionally shocking. I was emotionally invested in Kyle Lowry. I was very emotionally invested in seeing Kyle, and we didn't see him. So that made the game feel more just empty to me. I don't know.
Yeah, no, for sure. I actually did find it a very compelling reason for both ways that are promising for the Raptors and ways that are less promising for the Raptors. We'll get to all of that. or at least some of it. I shouldn't promise we'll get to all of it. But I wanted to start off with a little chat about Pascal Siakam, our old pal Pascal. With the unfortunate news that Kevin Durant is out for 4 to 6 weeks and will more than likely miss the All-Star game. I still think Durant's going to be voted in as a starter, but like he'll be replaced. That obviously opens up one more spot on the All-Star team. And I think Siakam has to be considered. Let me give drop some knowledge on you. 30, 10, and 10 against the Bucks. He was pretty comfortably, I mean, it's hard to say anybody in the game against Giannis is the best player out there, and Giannis got to the line 17 times and hit all 17 free throws.
And then after the game, Bud said that he thought they could have shot many more free throws. That was an incredible coach clip after the game.
Just intolerable. Like, I'm sorry, I don't like root against many people. No, it's not, I'm not even rooting against them as a person. I just, like, I cannot stand Mike Budenholzer.
Wow.
In terms of how he is in the court. I don't know him. If I got to know him, it'd probably be a fine relationship.
Shocked. This is very strongly worded.
Well, I mean, that's such a ridiculous take.
It
like,
was.
OG Anunoby fouled out on a play where, like, Giannis just drove straight into him.
There were a lot of offensive elbows in that game.
Yeah, and I know, like, the Giannis discussion is so fraught with, like, the old Shaq conversation. Like, he's so big, he's probably, and Dwight Howard, he's, like, probably fouled, you know, two times as often as it's called. And I think there's some legitimacy to that. But, like, sometimes the guy is moving and a defender who's like nearly as big as him is moving along with him, and it's just like incidental contact, and there shouldn't be a foul either way. And I think like that happens a lot in this league. And I think like we sort of, not to glorify the Raptors Heat officiating, but like I think there was a lot of physical no calls in that vein,
right,
in that game. And like the guy got to the line 17 times, and I think, you know, if you seriously broke it down by play, could you find another two free throws that he should have shot? Maybe
you could also find some offensive fouls though as well.
Yeah, and you probably could have taken four away from. Yeah, so like,
let's calm down. I thought that was funny.
Let's calm down, Mike.
Also, I thought it was funny that their social team used a kind of snarky Drake quote in their like end of the night rap when. It's like, how can you use a Drake quote when your coach, like, tried to get Drake banned, basically, the playoffs?
Like we've both won championships here. Like, let's, like, tip the hat and move on. Like, the Bucks
are
really
good. I thought
that
was funny. Also, someone on Twitter, I can't remember who
We've already gotten off topic.
Well, they asked me if my mom had any thoughts or words for Bobby Portis after this second game because of the first game. She definitely did. When he was at the line shooting free throws, I could hear her saying, miss, miss. And then every time like he would miss or get a foul called against him or miss a shot, whatever it was, free throw shot, whatever, she would say, good. Good for you. Every time something didn't go his way.
You know,
and I was like, wow, she is into this.
You know what she should have yelled?
Oh no. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Which is what Pascal and Bobby were,
I love Bobby Portis. Though.
I do too.
I understand why he gets on everybody's nerves, including Pascal Siakam.
Oh, but he's so much fun. Like if you're a Bucks fan, you would absolutely die for that guy. He's great.
Yeah. I don't think he's like the player type the Raptors could use the most, but honestly the Raptors could use any
personality would be awesome. We have to get back to talking about Pascal.
Yeah. Yeah. So 30, 10, and 10 against Milwaukee. Yes. Overall, he's averaging 21, 8.4, and 5. And over the last 15 games, these numbers just keep going up. 23.4 points, 9.2 rebounds, 6.3 assists. Maybe the best defender on the team, give or take a Fred Van Vliet. You have to consider it. So I want to break down the names, but I think we have both agreed repeatedly that he's playing at an all-star level.
For sure.
And whether or not he makes the team, like who really cares, because he is playing at that level and that's the important thing. Go on, the issue.
The issue is the Raptors. A week ago, we were their record. A week ago, I was saying, yeah, I'll roll with my fifth in the East. Now, what are they? Ninth, I think?
They are ninth.
The East right now? Yeah. Which, of course, is a product of the East being extremely the.
Yeah, there is now like a pretty clear delineation. And not that it can't be made up, but credit to the Cleveland Cavaliers for like playing really well after their injuries. But like the seeds like 6 through 11 are pretty bunched up, with Atlanta on the outside, who then they also beat Milwaukee, a good win on Martin Luther King Day. But it's seeds 7 through 11, Charlotte, Toronto, Boston, Washington, and the 9 Knicks are like, I don't know if the standings in front of me, but it's something like 2.5 or 3 games separating those 5 teams. But there's plenty of season to go. It's going to be hard what you're saying.
To have you two all-stars in a game, if you're on the outside looking in of those top 6 teams. And I personally think that Fred needs to be there. But that, again, saying that, you're looking at Pascal's numbers, of course, like they're absolutely worthy of being an all-star. And it shows why he has been an all-star before. He's been incredible. The assists continue to blow my mind.
For sure. He's been a great playmaker. And as you can see, Fred VanVleet occasionally getting ground down, which we will talk about. His playmaking has never been more valuable to this team.
Also,
OG Anunoby had some late game attempts against the Heat, and you can see he's just not quite there, which is fine. Like, this is development for him, and he's, you know, not as fluid as Siakam yet, because he hasn't had the reps, and maybe he's just not naturally that guy, and it will take more work. But you can see that, you know, because of his size and his fluidity, Siakam having the ball, one, to get Fred off the ball and make him a off-ball threat and like help the spacing for everybody, and B, to get, you know, also get Anunoby off the ball, so you have your two best spot-up shooters, three when Gary Trent comes back off the ball, like that it just makes the most sense to have, like, more often than not involve him in the primary action.
Oh my gosh, my brain just, oh sorry, I wanted to mention the moment after the Bucks game when Pascal had the triple double, 30, 10, and 10. It was so wonderful just to see how happy he looked, but even more than that, to see how happy his teammates looked for him. And I don't know if you remember this on the broadcast,
go on.
Scotty jumping up and down like a child would be jumping up and down on like Christmas morning was such a highlight for me. It was just so pure, and it perfectly captured the essence of Scotty, but also how loved Pascal is by his teammates. And I just loved that. I thought it was really sweet, and especially after, you know, the last season that Pascal has had and the start of this season, especially like coming back from injury, like it's been a grind for him, just to see him have that freedom on the floor with the success and then to see him celebrated by his teammates really just was wonderful.
I love the way he's talking about himself. I love the way he's talking about his game. I know that people, especially, you know, basketball fans who live on Twitter, can roll their eyes at this stuff. And I mean, I think sometimes I roll my eyes at it too, but
I do not roll my eyes at it.
I'm just saying, not in every case do I, like, it's a chicken or egg thing. Like, what comes first, the good perspective or the good play? Sometimes. But regardless of what came first, in this case, I really like the way Siakam appears to be approaching the game and approaching life. And it's really good to see. So just running down the All-Star conversation before we move on, I've got 7 locks, not counting Kevin Durant. You can tell me if you disagree. Joel Embiid, Giannis Antetokounmpo, DeMar DeRozan, James Harden, who I wouldn't have had a lock before Durant went out.
Right.
Now I think he's definitely getting it. I think he would have gotten in anyway, but now he's moved up to lock status for me because the Nets are going to have a player there. Trae Young, Jimmy Butler, Zach LaVine. all getting in. Any disagreements?
No, I do wonder if Zach will be healthy and playing in that game.
If he misses all of the next 3 or 4 weeks, maybe that puts him outside. So we're talking about anyway, I'll move on. So for now, we have those 7 guys.
Mm-hmm. I basically meant like if he would be healthy to play in the game. I think that he will be.
Has done enough to.
Of course, definitely.
Probably making it. So something would have to go dramatically wrong down the stretch or down the stretch before All-Star reserves are announced. Jrue Holiday, Fred VanVleet, Jarrett Allen, and Jason Tatum. Any disagreements there?
No.
I think Tatum is sort of elevated into that spot as the Celtics have vaguely improved their play. And that, my friends, only leaves one spot in the All-Star game. So you can say Pascal Siakam should be in the game, but then you got to take, you know, either one of those guys off, or you've got to really believe he's been better in the half season than all of the rest of these guys. I think my leader in the clubhouse for the spot would be Darius Garland. But also Chris Middleton, LaMelo Ball. Charlotte doesn't have anybody on the first 11 guys, so maybe you want to include them. Jaylen Brown, Miles Bridges, Bradley Beal, DeMontis Sabonis, Kyle Lowry. For the reason you mentioned, I don't think Siakam's getting in. I would bet on Garland or Ball getting that final spot right now.
Yeah, those are the two names that jump out to me too for different reasons though. Garland, just because of the season that he's having as well as the Cavs. But with LaMelo, he's just such a flashy player that like where better for him to.
Oh, great All-Star player for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, like a dream player to have at that game. So, and a deserving player. He's great. Super fun.
Yeah, like we're, you know, when you get down to this stage of things, you're really.
The problem is there's too much
talent.
Depends
what you're looking for.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd be all for a 15-man All-Star reverse, but then like we're still having conversations. It's just a matter of who you're picking between. So
yeah.
It doesn't really bother me the size of the roster. It does make being an All-Star more of an honor, which I'm generally for keeping things not in life, but like in terms of like rewards and awards. Like I think the more exclusive something is.
The more
meaningful it is. Yeah. And that's why like all NBA is sort of one of the ultimate things for me.
Right.
As opposed to just the All-Star game. Anyway, unless you have any thoughts, we can move on from there.
We can move on. I just with Zach, so thankful that he's healthy. I thought it was going to be a bad injury when he left the game with a knee injury, but he seems to be good. They're just going to be managing that. Thank goodness for that.
Yeah, for sure. So I think these next two points are related.
We can see
the good or the bad. So let's start with the good. Let's start with the bad, and then we'll quickly transition to the good. The bad, as we mentioned, was Khem Birch out, broken nose, chipping away at the Raptors' pretty much non-existent depth. He will be out as of Monday, 10 to 14 days, according
to Nick Nurse. Also, it just sucks for him. Like, take away the Raptors for a second. It really sucks for him to be traded to or be with the Raptors, sign with the Raptors, show how well he fits in with this team. Like, we saw towards the end of last year, it was just like a perfect fit. We saw this year how important he was to the team's success in the games that he played. Man, he can't catch a break this year at just staying on the court.
Yeah,
it's really
the biggest thing was just the knee swelling that was mysterious. You hate those lingering injuries that I'm sure we haven't gotten all the information about that, but there didn't appear to be a lot to solve. It was just sort of a waiting game and seeing what the optimal state they could get them to was. But I mean, games like Monday, which we'll get back to, I promise. You see, like, even if he's playing 18 minutes a night, like, those 18 minutes
it makes
are
a huge
so
difference.
Necessary.
Yeah.
The reason we know that is because over the last two games, Precious Achiuwa is averaging 38 minutes a game.
I like that in the rundown, it just says Precious, averaging 38 minutes, and then in brackets, LOL, because really, like, Wow.
Yeah, that's
it's a
not
lot
like,
of minutes. It's a lot.
I'm
of
not
precious.
Besmirching Precious. Like I no, think no, no. This is in the positive category. I'd say, like, even though he's still having his nightly adventures with shot selection, he has been really good. He was great defensively against Giannis. He has 10 combined offensive rebounds in those two games. Sure, he needs to calm down.
Also in capital letters, which I appreciated, needs to calm down. But yes,
I think what we're seeing is the reason the Raptors were so high on him. And I would say, like, that game against Milwaukee was the height of his
the best
utility.
For sure. I think that was definitely his best, like, performance for the Raptors in a game like that on, like, both ends. Like, yeah, you could definitely see why the team wanted him. And you also see why he is averaging 38 minutes right now, even though that's, you know, far too many minutes for the reasons we've mentioned. You can see why he's been the guy to get those minutes right now.
Yeah, I think it's definitely trending the right way. Saying that, like, he definitely does take some egregious shots. And I think it's a fine line between empowering your players and empowering them to play within the team concept. And I think you sort of, like, Scottie Barnes maybe goes the other way in terms of, like, he'll default to the pass.
Right.
Whereas, like, to
you don't
a fault.
Have to worry about
to a fault,
Precious
he will
shoot.
Default to the pass. Whereas to a fault, Precious Achiuwa will default to shooting. Also to a fault. And that's fine. I don't know which one you'd prefer. Like, I guess it depends on the role. So you'd maybe prefer them to be, like, the exact opposite.
Switching, switching.
But I mean, both are okay. And Achiuwa's got to be trending upward, right?
Yes. And you said it's a fine line. This is where I make my reference to Harry Styles, because I can. His last album was Fine Line. Final song on the album, the refrain is, "Will be a fine line, will be a fine line, da, 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 will be all right." And I think that Precious will be all right.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Yeah, it's a funny thing.
Bit of a stretch, but I needed to do it.
Yeah, there was a question pregame against Miami about the Raptors improving their roster. We might get into that in some Twitter questions, but Nurse mentioned there are, like, 7 guys who they really want to roll with, and anything else beyond that would seem like they don't really want to interrupt that. And I think Precious is one of those guys, and I think Kem Birch is one of those guys, and I think it's the other 5 starters that went healthy. And, like, right now, Chris Boucher would obviously be the 8th guy, but he's still not in, like, I don't think they're in a place where we're definitely seeing Chris Boucher minutes. I mean, as we've said frequently over the last few weeks, he's been great. He was great against Miami. Don't need to relitigate that. But just in terms of what this team is thinking about, you know, the medium-term future, so the end of the season, I think it's those 7 guys who the Raptors really don't want to interrupt or get in the way of. Or
yeah,
maybe there'd have to be something. Yeah, sorry, go on.
No. I was just going to say, you really saw that in the Miami game. Obviously, Kem and Gary weren't playing in that game, but
Yeah, so that brings us to the next point. We're really out here playing 6 guys and 9 minutes of Justin Champagny in game number 41 of the season. I remember game 7 against the Sixers in 2019. I think only 7 guys played in that game. I think Norman Powell was a DNP coach's decision. And like, even then it seemed extreme.
Yeah.
I get it.
And this has been, the trend this season. Yeah. The minutes are just, whew.
But there's some cognitive dissonance issues because, I mean, all year long, Nick Nurse has said, like, this is a weird year. You're going to need 13 mm-hmm. guys because of all the injuries, because of the COVID protocols, blah, blah, blah. And this was a lot of what the Twitter questions were about. There were questions or, you know, there's so much talk about development. And first and foremost, that's Scotty Barnes. But it's also you saw it early in the season with Delano Banton. There are certainly some long-term thoughts that should be going into the game as much as how do we win tonight.
Mm-hmm.
I get it, but I can't say I support it. Where are you at? Where are you at with?
Yeah,
what
it's
happened?
Really tough. I think.
Well, I think Monday is an extreme example. Yes, but we've sort of been heading there for a while.
It was an extreme example, but I also still think you have to find a way to add a few more people in. Like, you have to get people a few more minutes rest, even if it's just putting in people for very short stints, especially Fred. Like, we've talked about this all season, but the minutes he's been playing, you're kind of starting to see it some games, I think. And credit to Fred, like, his conditioning, like, the amount of effort he's able to put in each night and come up with, you know, some of these hustle plays that I don't know where he's digging into the well to find more energy, considering the way he plays and the amount of minutes he plays. But yeah, it's not great. Like you said, it's game 41. You can't. Like, you gotta get someone else into the game, even if it's just for really short stints. And I do think it's hard to, like, blame a coaching staff because, I mean, you referenced Nick saying that this season was going to be this way, and it is. This is not an ideal season to be coaching in the NBA, I don't think. I think we've seen that, whether it's through protocols or injuries or whatever, especially with the Raptors in general. Their situation has been different than any other team in this league. I thought it was interesting. I think this was in a recent piece of yours. If it wasn't, I apologize, but you can correct me.
I'll take credit. It's fine.
You can take credit. Yeah, where Nick essentially said, like, this season has been tougher than the bubble and Tampa. Like, just in terms of, like, there's been
He said that Monday night before the Miami game.
So there's been, like, deeper valleys, and it's just harder to, like, pick yourself up each night. And I thought that was really not surprising, but illuminating to hear him say that, like, to hear the coach say that while he's in it, as opposed to saying it, you know, at the end of the season or next season, looking back. I thought it was a really interesting thing to hear him say. And I think it's true. Like, I think it's probably not just true for the coaching staff, but for the players as well. So it's hard for me to, like, blame why this is happening. Like, we see why it's happening, but I definitely do agree that, we have to have more people playing.
Yeah. I think a lot of that was about what Nurse was saying about it being so difficult was about the way the COVID mm-hmm. situation has gone mm-hmm. and how it really seemed like a return to normalcy, sold out crowds, guys are vaccinated. I mean, it's society writ small, right?
We've like all been...
But, you know, when Nurse says, like, frankly, it's, like, hard on me. Like, I find myself having to, like, psych myself. I'm paraphrasing now, but, like, having to find the positivity, having to really do that. And that's not, you know, to use Nick Nurse's own lingo, that's not I forgot. That's not a frequency he tends to vibrate on. Like, he... he tends to be positive to a fault, not to a fault, I shouldn't say that, but it's like, it's been 2 years of this. It's taken control
of us. And also, like,
all of
I think a lot of questions that people seem to have about this team, specifically the roster, is the Raptors sign guys because they believe in their ability to develop players. Has the development been there? All of those questions. I think it is hard to go through the normal, like, it's hard. Everything is hard to be judged normally right now for the reasons we've just mentioned, you know?
Yeah. Saying that, let me read you some individual net ratings. -6.7. These are per 100 possessions. -7.5, -10.7, -12.3, You want to know who those net ratings belong
sure,
to?
Sure, sure.
For the season, Svi Mykhailiuk, Delano Batten, Yuta Watanabe, Malachi Flynn.
Listen,
you want to know why there's lots of extenuating circumstances,
sure.
But those are the guys who he has to find time for to supplement who's available now, and we can at least understand while saying I'd really like to see Yuta get 10 minutes a night with this group.
You were very harsh in your grading of Malachi Flynn.
I don't think I was, but let's get to it. Mid-season
Malachi,
grades.
You gave him a D.
You want to know what it almost was?
Well, yeah, I could tell. I could tell from your reasoning that, yeah, you basically said he hasn't played enough to have a higher rating, but also a lower rating. Actually, I should say, I don't think you're, well, I mean, I guess your grading was fair. I probably would have been higher. I think I would have just been C minus because for the same reasons that you said you couldn't give him a higher or lower grade, I just feel like he hasn't had enough time to.
I mean, that's my general takeaway.
Anything. Do you know what I mean?
That's my general takeaway, yes. But when your second-year point guard and the minutes he's playing, whatever those minutes are, has a true shooting percentage of 42.7, is the worst on the team.
Mm-hmm.
It's worse than Precious Achiuwa. Now, Malachi doesn't get to finish alley-oops, which usually help Precious up. But, like, he hasn't done enough to be lower. But in the time he's gotten, it's been really bad.
That sounds so brutal. I think I've just been waiting and waiting and waiting for.
I can't believe we're starting here with the grades.
I'm sorry. Just we were talking about what players who can get in. You can't play six players and Champagne who needs to get in. I really, really thought that at some point during this season we would see Malachi get like an extended run, and we haven't. And I
for sure did too.
I feel bad for him, I guess, and I'm not saying that he has shown. Like in the time that he has gotten, I'm not saying that he has done enough to show that he does deserve more, but I also just can't shake the fact that I think he's a better player than what we've seen this year. I just do.
I will say, like, of those four guys I just ran down, he has, like, by the numbers, gotten the least run and the least opportunity. I would also say he's shown the fewest flashes per minute. Like not just on
but coming into this season, like just looking at what you've seen, what you have heard from the team about what they have seen and think or thought about Malachi, don't you think he's a better player than what we've seen this season? Because I do.
I mean, he almost has to be. Not to be a jerk about it, but, like, he was better last year. Like, I don't think, like, he cemented himself as a future NBAer last year, but, like, he showed signs of it for sure. And
so I'm still holding
out. We just haven't seen those flashes at all. We haven't seen them at all.
But also, like, when you talked about who gets in, I want to see more Delano.
I'm still at the place where I would prefer him in the G League for an extended time.
Well,
if you have Svi and Yuta both available, I want to see Banton with Raptors 905. Playing 30 minutes a night. I think that's the best thing for him.
I agree with you. Like, I think if Delano is getting 10 minutes or less with the Raptors, he should be with 905. Like, playing, getting reps in a game, that's definitely to be preferred. But I feel like looking at the Raptors team and the minutes and the issues that we've just talked about, I would like to see him getting time with the Raptors.
Understandable. I think, like, I just think you only need one of him or Flynn up at any given time.
But you've also said that Flynn isn't going to get in, so.
Well, but I'm not saying I don't think he should. I'm saying that he hasn't merited it. And even if I didn't think he should get in, you still need one of those guys as a body.
So who is your preferred guy to be with?
I already
Raptors?
Said, I think Utah, I think, has shown the most over his Raptors tenure to be a piece who could fit in and contribute.
And also I do want to say, like, I know that his production has been down a bit since he returned from protocols. I think that, like, no one should be too concerned about that, at least not yet. Like, let people come back and get their feet under them. And
yeah, I just think his floor in terms of like what he, like, you know, certain things he's going to bring, like he's going to be in the right place defensively. And like, he's going to bring energy and some sort of, you know, steal passing lane threat and even a little bit of rim protection. We saw earlier in the year how he had really improved as a guy with like a minimal amount of secondary creation. I just think he's shown the most. And like, I think he would be ahead of Svi, and he would be ahead based on what they've done, just based on merit. That's all we're discussing, not what's smart long-term. I think he's the guy. If Nick Nurse is in this, like, we need these wins mode, I think he's the guy. If not, there's more of a case to make for Delano, I think.
No, I agree with you there. Like, I definitely think that we had had the decision about Utah Svi and Champagny and like where that ranking was. And I think that Champagny has put himself, you know, above in that conversation, at the top of that conversation. And then I think it would be Utah. So I guess I think we agree. We just were coming to that agreement in a different way.
Yeah, I think like two of these guys, I'm including Champagny in there. At, mm-hmm. at the very minimum, two of those guys need like 10 to 15 minutes a night.
Yeah.
And like that still leaves your starters playing a ton of minutes, like near the league lead in minutes.
Yeah.
But it's just
more
less
manageable for sure.
Because it's hard. And the Raptors have three games to make up that were postponed. So, like, the second, you know, that just, the math is simple. The second half of the season is going to be more condensed than the first half was. Like, it's, that's the way it is. I think the Raptors are either at the bottom or very close to the bottom in games played. And each team has the same number of games, or the same, they end their seasons on the same day.
The second half always feels more packed, too, because you have the All-Star break, like, that week of.
But you do get the break. Games. So that's not nothing. But then the games come fast and furiously.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Fast, quickly and furiously. Let's quickly go through my grades. You can tell me if you disagree anywhere. I know one place you're going to disagree, so I'm stealing myself with it. We talked last week about Fred VanVleet. I kept him at an A instead of an A+.
A+.
Okay, whatever. You know my methodology here.
But what would he have had to have done to get that bump to an A+? Like, why didn't he? What has he not done that isn't a fault of his own? Like,
well, but I there also has to be a ceiling thing, right? Like, I do think at some point there is.
You would, like, be the professor that would not give someone an A+ because then how could you get a higher grade?
I mean, there is an element of truth to that. But I
don't like those professors.
That's fine. As a student, I didn't like them either. But like, I remember the way, and not to like compare Fred VanVleet to Kyle Lowry for the billionth time.
Yeah.
But I remember like peak Kyle Lowry seasons in which he is just impacting the game on such a high level on a like team that's winning 65% of its games, and this team isn't. Is that Fred VanVleet's fault? I mean, largely not. That's why he has an A. But
what does he have to do to get an A+? Is it just that the Raptors
to drag some of those role players that aren't getting minutes right now to better performances? Like there is some sort of, I'm going to make this work for you guys. There is that extra bit of, my impact is so immense that you see players playing above their heads.
I guess I just
and
feel
I
like
I saw
without
that with Kyle Lowry, and I see it with Fred VanVleet. I just don't see it to the same level. And barring that, I'm not giving an A+ to a guy who just isn't like a super duper star.
I disagree. That's just how it's going to be. I don't think that we have to, I don't think we can look at Kyle Lowry, greatest Raptor of all time, and put that same level of grading or those circumstances on Fred. And also, I look at the Raptors and who they are, and especially the amount of games that they've played without their big like three, quote unquote. Fred has been the guy that has been out there the most. I think he's missed the fewest games of all of those guys this season. Think about the amount of games that he has pulled those guys to wins, and he has gotten more out of them and helped them come along and shown them how to win and done all of those things. To me, I just don't think that you can ask for more from Fred. And I can't believe we are fighting over an
grades do not exist for anything but to have these nitpicking conversations.
Right. That is how strongly I feel about the role that Fred has played this year on both ends of the court and also in the locker room and away from the floor as well, the times that we don't see. I think that Fred is an A plus. I feel strongly about that. And that's why I'm arguing this passionately about a grade that
he's been great. He's been great. And I would say that his defense is maybe not at previous levels, but there's no Kyle Lowry to split those, like,
he's also like leading the league in minutes.
There are reasons for all of it, right? Like,
is he still leading the league in minutes?
I believe minutes per game, not total minutes.
Per game. Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. Fred is great. Scotty Barnes, A minus.
Fred is A plus. Yep, continue.
What do you give Scotty Barnes? I gave him an A minus.
Yeah, totally fine with that. I think that's great.
Pascal Siakam, this is the one I actually thought you'd vehemently disagree on. And I think you will. Like, I gave him a B plus only because...
Yeah.
He's played 28 games, and that first third of the season where he was, like, fine, but not this level of Pascal, still is, like, because he's played 30 games or 28 games, like, that's a big chunk of a season.
No, I have no issue with that.
Wow. Okay. OG Anunoby, I gave him a B. It's just, as I said in my Kem Birch part, the most important ability is availability. Similar to what we just talked about, Pascal Siakam. When you don't play that many games, like I think OG has been very steady and at times has looked like he's going to take a leap, but this has basically been the version of Anunoby that we've come to expect. And
he's been very good, but not like thrilling, over the top, surprising. Yeah, no, I agree with that.
Gary Trent, B plus.
Great.
Yeah, I could have been convinced to an A minus with Gary Trent, but, you know, missed 8 games now. And I think the defense was waning a little bit. Chris Boucher, this might have been the hardest one, because it's like, how do you balance an A and a D? or a D and an A?
I mean,
I gave him a B minus.
I think that's fair. I think that his role has been so incredible over the past month or so. I don't know how long it's been. Again, my brain and time doesn't work. Has it been 2 months that he's been playing great?
So Chris Black of Sportsnet has pointed out that his numbers are really way up since he was benched in the November 28th game.
Yeah, so that was what I was going to say. Through December, I think he's been really good.
I don't think we really noticed it until about halfway through December, but he's been much better since then.
Yeah, I mean, I would maybe say... You said, what did you give him, a B minus?
B minus.
I'd probably say a B or a B plus, but I'm not like super against
you're
that.
You're not Fred levels going to spend 5 minutes arguing.
No, I'm not. So again, that shows how I feel about Fred VanVleet, I guess. Continue.
And I don't think we need to talk much more about it. I gave Justin Champagny a B, and I just want to explain myself a little bit. Like, obviously, he's exceeded any expectations of a undrafted rookie free agent.
You know who else is an undrafted player? The guy that you're comparing to Kyle Lowry for the reason you wouldn't give him an A+. Continue.
Yeah, but now he's getting paid $22 million a year.
We're good. Continue. So I'm curious.
We're clearly not good, and I was still right about last week, and you were wrong. But I gave him a B just because his role isn't big enough to warrant higher, like, you know, versus expectations, like he's like one of the highest players on the board, but it's just hard to.
And also it's awesome to see Champagne getting a B. That's great. Like, that is incredible for him, and I hope it continues.
Yeah. If you want to see the rest of my grades, theathletic.com, go subscribe, go read, and thanks.
Subscribe to The Athletic, read Eric, read everybody, listen to us, listen to everybody.
Yeah.
Great deal.
Well, don't listen to everybody. I trust most people here at The Athletic, but just in general, don't listen to everybody.
I just meant podcast-wise. Like, there's plenty of content if you are a person who likes to hear basketball talk as you go about your day and your chores and whatever else. Or commute, I guess. I don't know. Are people commuting now? I feel it. Maybe even
some people
whatever.
Some people are. So let's get to a few Twitter questions before we sign off here. And we're really going to have to keep it short because I keep on getting mad at myself for going too long. Each week it happens. Go Sports says,
doesn't help that I was talking about my feet being wet in an exam in university. Continue.
Yeah, but that's banter. People love banter. 5 minutes of banter, maybe not necessary off the top, but here we are. Go Sports says, why did we take Malachi Flynn over Desmond Bane? Well, why did a bunch of teams take their players over Desmond Bane? And I'm only mentioning this question, and thank you for the question. I don't mean to deride any question. But the Raptors front office gets deified, and I think this isn't to criticize the Raptors front office. This is to talk about, like, remembering that, like, even the best processes don't produce 100% of the time.
It's really hard to predict the future when you are drafting a player.
Yeah, the risk of, like, saying, oh, Masai is one of the best executives in the league, which I think he is, and he's, like, the best decision maker, and the Raptors have this great development system, is thinking they can't fail. And, like, let's remember, like, with all the information, with all the time that goes into it, like, the best scouting departments, the best front offices screw up a lot. It's really hard, especially with the 29th freaking pick. You know?
And there's also, like, circumstances, and I hate to harp on this, and I'm not trying to use it as an excuse, but the past 2 years of the NBA season has just been insane, and I think it's extremely hard to evaluate talent over the past 2 years. The bubble, being in Tampa, being here, you have fans, you don't have fans, there's injuries, people are in and out. Not that that is a complete, what's the word I'm thinking of? Excuse.
Absolution.
That is not an absolution for, you know, what we're seeing.
I was going to say absolvement.
I knew the word, but I could. Yeah, that is basically what I was thinking of. Yeah, I just think it's a really hard time to accurately or properly evaluate because there's so many things out of the ordinary happening over the past 2 years. And I also think that we've talked about it earlier in this conversation. I think Malachi is better than Adi, and I wouldn't be surprised if he does get time somewhere.
But more to the point, let's leave room for errors. Because people make mistakes. Desmond Bane has been great. Who's to say, another thing that we often talk with the Raptors, who's to say he would have had the same success here as a two-way wing, playing behind OJ Anunoby, Pascal Siakam, playing behind the two guards last year. It might not have worked out the same for him. But love Memphis, love Ja Morant, love Taylor Jenkins.
Love Ja Morant. Also, Taer is human.
I feel like this is a good spiritual question for you. Not like in a God spiritual way, just like a more philosophical way. Cynthia Lynch, touching on the idea that this was Freebird week, does always being able to beat Milwaukee make up for never being able to beat Detroit?
Oh, man. This is kind of like those, like the quote when players are like, I hate losing more than I like winning.
Yeah.
So I think that no, it doesn't. I know that like people say it feels so great to beat the Bucks and blah, blah, blah. Like, haha, it's so funny that the Bucks lose to the Raptors. I don't think it makes up for it because the annoyance factor of watching the Raptors not show up against the Pistons, and that team just looked like a team that was not the team that we had just watched for the past 2 weeks. And the fact that they do this time and time again without reason, to me, it does not make up for it, because the frustration of watching this team lose to the Pistons time and time again in many different ways is more frustrating than the joy of watching them defeat the Bucks. Thoughts? What do you think?
We crave logic, and I completely agree. We crave logic in a logical world, which is which is a problem. It should make up for it, but it doesn't quite,
because it just doesn't make sense. Like, their performance against the Pistons on Friday night was infuriating.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it was like it's not just us watching it. I'm sure for the players in the game, it was even more infuriating.
Like, it was just such a soft offensive start. And it's just like, if you run your stuff with like the intention and 100%, like, I hate the word effort because it's gets thrown around incorrectly, I feel. But like, if you just run your stuff as hard as possible, like those turnovers leading those, I don't know how I said that word, those turnovers leading to, you know, Detroit fast breaks don't happen.
Yeah, well, if the game, the Raptors that we saw against Milwaukee, if they had, if that team had played on Friday, it would have been a 45-point win.
I don't think it would have been a 4-5 point win, but it would have been a
I'm being dramatic because that's how annoyed I was.
Credit to Cade Cunningham. He was awesome. And Trey Lyles, speaking of the Athletic, my buddy James Edwards, who apparently James Edwards the third, who was voted Michigan Sports Writer of the Year. Congratulations to him.
Congratulations.
Has a really good piece with Trey Lyles talking about his sort of mental health state and his routine and being in therapy. It's really good.
That's like amazing.
A nice conversation.
I had not seen that. Congratulations to James. And I definitely
and
read that. And to Trey. No, Trey was really great. And he has had a couple of really good games for the Pistons in the past couple weeks, which has been really awesome to see.
Last one. J-Mock asks, I would love a deep dive into considered a flagrant foul. It seems ones that aren't are, and vice versa lately. What's up with how those are called? Holly, go off.
I have to say that when you started that question and you said J-Mock, I thought you were talking about an NBA player, and I was like, oh my gosh, I have no idea who this is. How am I out of the loop?
No.
Really had a panic moment there. You and me both, J-Mock. I am with you. I agree very strongly with that question, and I don't have an answer for you. It feels like a lot of times it is the call is made on the result, like whether someone falls to the ground or whether they appear to be hurt or injured or like they were. Yeah, the whole intent thing doesn't really seem to follow through on how flagrants are called, in my opinion. And I do think it is an issue and it frustrates me to no end.
I'm going to get to the intent in a little bit. I do want to say that this question I'm sure was inspired
by
Caleb.
The
was it Caleb Martin
night,
or is it the other Martin? I can't. Which one's on Miami?
Now you're making me panic.
Sorry. When Martin fouled Scotty Barnes on an awesome coast-to-coast dunk, there was,
Caleb.
A hand on the back, certainly from behind, when Barnes was going full speed, and so was Martin, and a swipe at the block, which hit Barnes' arm, and then maybe some extracurricular stuff as they were coming to the ground. Although, like, when two players are poised to fall to the ground, it's hard for me to, like, really expect much of them other than to try and not injure themselves. So I don't want to assign too much, like, malice there. For what it's worth, Scotty Barnes said he didn't think it was a flagrant. Now, I don't think he's in a position to make that call.
Right.
But why I want to bring that up is because I wasn't, like, outraged by the lack of flagrant.
A lot of people were,
does bewilder me to the point of this question based on what's been called. So let me read the difference. So a flagrant one is if contact is committed against a player with or without the ball is interpreted to be unnecessary, a flagrant foul penalty one will be assessed. So that's not about intent. It's just about whether it's necessary. A flagrant two is if contact committed against a player with or without the ball is interpreted to be unnecessary and excessive, a flagrant foul penalty two, which of course gets the guy ejected, will be called. And now I think the reason that I wasn't outraged by that, by the call, it being a common foul, is because I sort of grew up thinking that this definition of a flagrant two was what made a flagrant one.
Right.
Do you sort of feel similarly to me?
Yeah, like just I also think that there is the rule about any contact above the head.
Yeah, for sure. Right? That's a separate issue, although maybe valid in this case.
Contact when a player is in the air. So like if someone is like, you know, creating contact with a player when they are in the air, so it's dangerous, and it doesn't seem necessary. Yeah, I mean, to me, the flagrant one definition almost is like a foul. Like, you know what I mean? Like, the flagrant two definition seems like a flagrant one definition.
Yeah, a flagrant two should be a flagrant one. The current flagrant two should be a flagrant one. A flagrant two should then become something that, like, is not only unnecessary and excessive, but, like, with malice.
Reckless. Reckless. Like, yeah, with intent. With malicious intent, I guess.
So I'm okay. Like, I'm generally okay with them calling that a common foul, except that it makes no sense given what we've seen called a flagrant in the past. And, like, so if it's just unnecessary, like, I think that nudge in the back is, like, kind of fine and incidental. I think the block attempt that turned into him hitting him from behind in the arm is, like, unnecessary and dangerous. And so I would have given him a flagrant one based on how I've seen the rules called. Based on the wording of the rule, I don't hate that it was a common foul.
Yeah, see, I think the problem is the wording of the rule and the way that it is called, which is not to the wording of the rule. Like, you mentioned the block attempt that ends up hitting him as being dangerous. I feel like officials often look at it, and commentators as well, and they say it was a play on the ball. Like, if he was going for the ball, it doesn't matter if he hit the guy across the face. You know, like, and that's fine, but then that's not going to the rule as it's written.
Yeah, just be consistent with it and, like, call it to the rule. So
we all know what it should be. And yes, but to the question, to how the question was posed, yeah, I agree with you. I often don't know what is going to be
we have no called answers.
And what's going to be reviewed. It changes game to game, and I understand why that's extremely frustrating for players, especially when it changes within the same game.
We have no answers. We have some explanation, but no answers. Thank you for your questions. I will continue to put out a call before every episode, or at least most episodes.
Yeah, I love hearing what people are thinking.
Yeah, thank you, everybody. I think we answered most of them that we didn't get to throughout the podcast. There were some trade questions that we didn't exactly get to, but we'll get to them because it is January 18th as we speak, and February 10th is the trade deadline. That leaves 2 or 3 podcasts beforehand. So we will get there. I'm going to not talk about The Watchmen because we are already an hour into this.
All right, well, I am going to say this because
I know you want
to
bring something up. So what do you want to talk about?
I tweeted about this yesterday, but I need to bring it up to you. Did you know? Do you know what I'm going to say?
No, go.
Did you know that Stephen A. Smith?
Oh, I did see this.
Is a recurring character on General Hospital.
I did not know. And like you, I am... to honor Stephen A. Smith, I am bamboozled. I am mystified. I am perplexed by this not being all anybody talks about all the time.
Listen, I am still in Nova Scotia. As you said, my mother, she has been watching Days of Our Lives. She records shows and just kind of watches them in the background while she's doing other things because, you know, you can literally not watch a soap opera for a year and return every Christmas and the same thing is still happening. With Days, it is Marlena being possessed by the devil like 30 years after that first happened. That's an actual plot point. But with General Hospital and Stephen A. Smith, she had the show on in the background. I heard his voice. I wasn't paying attention. I was reading something on my laptop, heard his voice, and my head snapped up because I thought, my mom's watching ESPN. We don't get ESPN. What is happening? Stephen A. Smith is on General Hospital. Do you want to know his character's name?
Yes.
Brick.
Sure. Like, that's not a surprising soap opera name.
I love
name
it. It's
in
so
least.
Incredible. I freaked out and said, oh my God, that's Stephen A. Smith. And my mom said, okay. I said, Mom, do you understand? And she said, oh, yeah, that's Brick. Like, it was just like a very normal, of course he was Brick. He has portrayed this character since March 31st, 2016. But even better, he previously played a reporter during the Metro Court hostage crisis in 2007. And apparently he once had the actor who plays the character Sonny, anyone who watches General Hospital would know this. He had him on First Take and they discovered that he is a longtime fan of this show. So they brought him on to be like a character. And his character is surveillance for the mob. Ooh. It's incredible. I love this. I love that he grew up watching General Hospital because of his sisters, is what I saw in an interview, because, of course, I needed to look this up. And Stephen A. Smith is a recurring character on General Hospital. I cannot tell you how delighted this makes me. I love this. It's amazing.
I looked it up. General Hospital, of course, runs on ABC. Stephen A. Smith works for ESPN. Both parent companies are Disney. I'm just glad they can make this happen for him.
It's the awesome. It's the greatest thing ever. Imagine growing up watching this with your family, loving it, and then getting to take your enthusiasm for the dramatic to soap operas, which are only dramatic all the time. It's incredible. I can't believe more people are not talking about this at all times. I'm so delighted by it. I'm sorry. I just needed to talk.
My
about
mom that. Watched Young and the Restless growing up, so therefore I know a bunch of Young and the Restless characters.
Some of those actors are probably on General Hospital now.
Oh, yeah. Like when I'm daytime flipping and I see like an actor on a different show, it's like you. And also when like Shamar Moore made the cross from daytime television to primetime television. That was very confusing.
Huge moves, right?
Congratulations to Shamar. Holly, we really have to go.
I know, I'm sorry. I was just excited.
I mean, that is one of our better tangents, I would say.
Thanks so much for listening, guys.
More soap dish next week.
Apologize for all of the babble today. Yeah. Banter, babble,
the Raptors are in Dallas on Wednesday. Gary Trent remains questionable for that. In Washington to wrap up the 5-game road trip. On Friday, back home to play Portland on Sunday. We'll probably talk on Monday, but don't hold me to that. Don't hold me to anything I say on this podcast. I am an unreliable narrator. Holly, get home safely.
Thank you so much.
Get back to Toronto safely. I don't want to tell you what your home is. And that's a big philosophical question we really can't have
that
right
is.
Now.
So we will end it on that and say that I have two homes. Thank you everyone for listening. We super appreciate it. Hope you're having a good week.
For sure. Remember to stretch before you shovel. See ya.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.